Sahana Bhavatu, Sahana Bhunaktu, Sahariyam Karavavahai, Tejasvinamaditamastu Mavidvishavahai, Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
So continuing from the, we were on Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu chapter 34, so finishing the chapter, now then some, summarizing that information from the Jaiva Dharma chapters 26 to 28, the discussion between the Goswami and Vrajana. Vrajana, Gurudev, so far we have understood your elaborations on Vibhava Alambana. Kindly explain the stimuli known as Udipana. Goswami. Objects and persons who stimulate bhava are called Udipana. Sri Krishna's qualities, endeavors, embellishments, smile, bodily fragrance, flute, bugle, ankle bells, conch, foot impressions, places of pastimes, Tulsi Devi, the Vaishnavas, Ekadasi days, and so on are all Udipana. Right, so basically, is anything connected to Krishna that reminds you of Krishna, that's Udipan. That's what is being established. So anything that reminds you of Krishna, that's Udipan. So you see, generally speaking, it'll always be something direct. Krishna himself, what activities he does, the devotees do, things connected like Ekadasi or festivals, or, you know, you see the temple, you remember Krishna. Anything that reminds you, that's Udipan. Because the idea is that reminds you of Krishna, the person. Of Krishna's qualities, there are three kinds: kayika, physical; vachika, vocal; and manasika, intellectual. His age is one of the main kayika, or physical, qualities, as described in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 2.1.309. The Kaumara age lasts until the age of five. Stage lasts until the age of five. Pauganda up to age 10. And Kaishora age up to 15. From then on, one is known as Yovana, a youth. Kaishora is further divided into Adi, beginning, Madhya, middle, and Sesha, end. Because the Kaishora, means all of them you can, but we're specifically going to do that because that's going to have different flavors. The Kaishora is the main age for us. Because at Yovana, you can always just block it. No, that thing. Yeah, just pull it off. Pull it back. Yes. Okay. Because that's the age when then the adolescence, when he then has his main pastimes with the gopis. Because youth, actually, technically, when he turns to the point of youth, that's when he goes to Mathura. Right? That's the whole thing. Because there's a special flavor. It means he's eternally youthful. But there's a special flavor in the Kaishora age, because in that then it has that freshness of youth. Well, then there's youth, because youth that technically goes from 16 to 29, like that. And so, the Kaishora has that specialty. And now in that you'll have that beginning, middle, and end, because the beginning will be just when they're just, you know, contacting each other, the middle, then the end will be that maturity within that. So there'll be three different flavors that'll be within that. Is this me? Yeah. The most prominent kayika, bodily quality of Krishna, is this saundarya, beauty and attractiveness, which is described as a perfect grace and symmetry in all his bodily features. So, means the their symmetry, everything's perfectly symmetrical. It's understood that in the Veda, then when they're talking, I think the stop in the Veda when it's talking about art and all that, because that's where it'll come from, right? Because art, what we know, we think of art as a 2D feature. And then there's sculpting, which is 3D. But in the Vedic, sculpting is the primary element, and then you can also represent that in 2D as painting and that thing. So one of the qualities it points out is, one of the first qualities is symmetry. The more symmetrical it is, then everything's bound, then that makes beauty. So that's the whole aspect. So that means everything in his body, everything is exactly the same. You know, how his right eye is, his left eye will be. How his left ear is, his right eye will be like that. You know, the mouth, how it'll be, the shoulders, everything. How it'll be is symmetrical. Because you can see is that for ourselves, much of the time, the distinction between whether it's very attractive or not is the symmetry. Someone who has that good symmetry, it looks better. Someone who doesn't, it has less. You know, like Astavakra is not known for being a great beauty. Like that. And then there's a perfect grace, how he moves in that. It's not rough, it's not coarse. You know, that was how Vrindadevi knew that someone else was playing the part of her husband, because they were moving with grace in that. They weren't rough. So she can immediately tell, this is not my husband. Okay? So Krishna, graceful, all his movements and everything, they're graceful. Like that, because that's the origin of the thing, this fineness, refinement, and all that. Then there'll be a specifically manifestation of that grace that we'll call feminine. You know, that'll have its own specific way of that. And then there'll be the masculine grace. You know, so the point is, grace is the generic principle. Prasadana, embellishments, include his attire, his style of dress, and his ornaments and jewelry. Right? So these are all his dress, so then. How he's dressed himself, how he's carrying himself, the kind of clothes, how he's wearing them, the ornaments he wears with them, all that will be points that you could say are bodily. Right? Krishna's flutes, one of which is always in his hand, are of three varieties, Venu, Murali, and Vamsi. The length of the Venu is the width of 12 fingers. Right? So that'll be that boy. It's a small one. He is as thick as a thumb and has six holes. So he's a short, small, you know, like this in modern you call like a piccolo. Mm. Like that. The Murali measures 2 cubits in length. So a cubit's 18 inches. So that'll be that long. It's 3 feet long. That's a big, big one. Has a hole in his mouth and 4 other holes of 4 various scales. He produces a most enchanting sound. So that seems to be where he does these slower, kind of more deep kind of things like that. The length of the Vamsi is the width of 17 fingers, right? So that's 12, and then what do you need more? 5, right? So then that'll be that much more. Mm. He has 8 scale holes with a half a finger's width between the scale holes. So it's very small. So a finger that wide, so then half of that. So they're quite close together. Obviously, the other ones, it's bigger, they're probably very far apart. You know. The playing hole at the mouth of the Vamsi is 4 fingers from the top. Okay, so this much from the top, then you have the hole, and then after that you have the other holes there that are all right next to each other. So you see it's a very tight little flute. Generally, a lot of times you see him, he means in the pit paintings and that, is generally he has that Vamsi.
Yeah.
Like that. But much of the time we see, yeah, with the deities, we're putting the Murali. You know, we're putting that big, big flutes like that. So that's actually the size. You know? While the last or bottom hole is 3 fingers from the end. Right? So they're quite tight together there. And that, so probably you can get very nice notes within that, you know, because the thing is if you want to be able to play, because in ragas, then because he can play with his flute everything, just like Radharani with her Venus can play everything. So that means you have to be able to play within those 22 shrutis, right? Because the 7 notes that we have, so it means one raga can maximum have 7 notes, minimum 5. But the variety within a note, it can have different placements, so there's different gaps between the notes. like that. And the Western music is just the half note is exactly a specific space, because they're trying. The Western music is based off of the harmony being played at once, and so because of that, they have to fix it. Otherwise, you can't use these big pipe organs or these orchestral performances and that, because then the note, if it's like a quarter note off, it won't match. So they just fixed it like that, and so we're used to that. But it's a little bit out of tune, but everybody's used to it, so it's pretty standard. You know, it's just like, let's say, the sounds that you're used to, and so then for you they're fine, they're normal. You know, like the baby cries a certain way or talks a certain way, you know, it's fine. If it's a different way, then you think it's a problem. Right? But for someone else, if the baby's making any noise at all, it's a problem. Right? You know, so you'll see is that, let's say, like when Prabhupada's doing kirtan and that, when he's doing, especially when he's doing a bhajan, each time he sings, he'll use slightly different notes. So that's the thing. In the Vedic, you change the notes each time. The modern is you put all those variations together at once. You know, the violin is playing this, the second violin is playing that, the horns are playing this, the trombone is playing that, the cellos are playing this. So they're all playing different varieties of that you can do with the melody, but they're doing it all at once. While the Vedic is, no, you do one after the other. That way you get the variety. You can go on for hours that way. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So, because of that, then you can put the things in the notes can be a half note or a quarter note apart. So the smallest amount that you can hear clearly is a quarter note. Right? And so with half notes, of course, you're quite good. The quarter notes is there. So then there'll be, these quarter notes will be throughout. So there's 22 quarter notes in the scale, what we'll call an octave. So there'll be four positions for sa, three for re, two for ga, four for ma, four for pa, three for da, two for ni. And that's your regular sa grama. Now, so you're starting like that, that's how it goes. The ga grama means you start the zero point there, the octave there, and then you have two, four. Then, you understand? So you're just shifting it over. And because of that, then the pattern that you'll get will be different. So that's why then you have, and then if you start with ma, then ma is the thing, and then it goes from there. Does that make sense? So because of that, then we see in Radha Krishna's pastimes, they use all these. So nowadays, everyone uses the sa grama, based on the sa. Start with that. And that position with that pattern. But sometimes, I don't know if they still use it, but at least 20 years ago, there were musicians that would use ma grama. But they say ga grama is gone, because ga grama is Gandharva. They say it's gone back to the heavenly planets. But we see so many times in the pastimes of Radha and Krishna, they're referred to as ga grama. Like that. Like when Krishna comes as the Devata girl to Radharani's house, and they ask her to sing something. And so they ask her to sing in Gagrama, right? Because she's from the heavenly planet, so she can sing in Gagrama. So that means they all know that. And then they say a specific beat, so there must be some particular beat that's very, very technical. So they give them the most technical kind of thing, because she's so qualified, so she can sing this. So you'll see that they use all these. So then when you have these closed spaces, then you can get all those quarter notes and everything like that, depending on your full finger, half finger, which side you open it. The one hole, if you open it one side, you'll get it, go down in one way, you open it another way, it'll be different. Does that make sense? Because it's all so close together. So in that way, in other words, the point is with his vamsi, he can play all the different ragas.
Also the string instruments, like, instead of moving from one note to another note, you can go it like continuously.
Yes.
That also slide. You can play with, if it is very near, you can play with the flute.
Yes. Like sometimes you'll hear it more on the shanai, but it's also holes. Like you'll hear, in our the morning raga like that. There's one point where he just goes like that, but it's just holes. But he's doing that by rolling his fingers, and you can get all that. And so then, you know, you see that in flute, I think Hari Prasad Chaurasia does that.
I was about to mention Hari Prasad Chaurasia.
Yeah, because he can do that on the flute.
You wonder how Krishna plays, if he can.
Yeah, well, he learned from Annapurna. So that's the thing. He'll be different from anyone else because he learned from Annapurna. So similar will be style will be what you'll see Nikhil Banerjee play or Ravi Shankar or what's his name? I mean, Aladdin is the teacher, but then the brother. What's the brother? I can't remember the brother. Ali Akbar. You know, it's generally names you hear of. The only ones you don't hear of is Nikhil Banerjee and Nikhil Banerjee and the father. So, it's a style, but it's said how much the father knew. Annapurna learned 60%. Then Amjad Ali, the son, he learned 50%. And I think Nikhil Banerjee is about that, or he may be 40%. And Ravi Shankar only knew 25%, right? And he's so good. You know, he's you know, so accredited, and he only understood 25%.
And his daughter, 10%.
Hmm?
His daughter.
Oh, yeah, like
she's
that.
Like a master, you know?
Yeah, so that's the whole thing, like that. So the point is who knew the most on Annapurna? That's who Hari Prasad Chaurasia is studying from. Like, when she teaches a rag, she does one rag for 5 years. Everybody else, you do a rag for, you know, some months or things like that, or, you know, first one, maybe a little bit more. Hers is 5 years. So you know everything about it. Then when you understand, then you can go to another rag and then, you know, very quickly pick it up. So she was very, it didn't work out. She married Ravi Shankar.
Yeah.
But it didn't really work out because they do jugalbandis because she's so much better player and he'll want to lead, but she's actually better. You know, so he'll do stuff and she'll do more far out stuff, and everybody could tell it's more far out.
Yeah.
You know, so yes. How you say what's that called? They call that it's creative differences. When there's a breakup and something, it's creative differences. You know, like the guy left the film or the play because of creative differences. So, yeah. Okay. Overall, Vamsi has 9 holes. The conch shell held by Krishna opens to the right with a clockwise whirl and is called Panchajanya. All the paraphernalia and personal traits of Krishna are infused with Udipana Bhava, which evokes love for Sri Krishna. As the devotee's attachment is stimulated, the devotee becomes filled with bliss and Stai Bhava is produced within the heart.
All right. So does that mean all of Krishna's fruits are made of bamboo?
No, I think they're different. In Nectar Devotion it explains, I think some are metal. Vamsi may be bamboo. But I kind of have the idea that Murali is metal. But it also could be. I also think is that each one of the three can be in different
different materials.
Different materials, yeah, and they'll give different flavors. Like the big Murali, you know, in metal would give one sound, the bamboo would give another. Like that. So it's Stai Bhava in turn crystallizes into rasa. Right? So then from the vibhava, because the whole point was being made before by Rupa Goswami, the whole process of the bhava starts with the vibhava. Right? So that attraction to Krishna, right? Because there's the aspect of the ashray and vishay, that's there. And because of that, then things connected to Krishna invoke bhava. And from that, then the Stai Bhava comes up. Because it's Krishna, then it'll be... So the Bhava is the first thing, and then the Stai Bhava is the specific. Right? Does that make sense? In other words, ecstasy is a generic aspect. Mm-hmm. Then within that, there's ecstasy within the particular rasas. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? Like seeing Krishna's flute will create ecstasy. But it'll create it... Because of the Stai Bhava, it'll create a different... It'll the path it will take will be different in Mother Jashoda than the cowherd boys and the gopis. Right? you know, for her, it's just her son. He's, you know, he's a musician, he plays the flute. For the cowherd boys, it means, you know, we go out in the field, we play flutes, we jump, we play buffalo horns, we have fun. And for the gopis, it means he calls and like this and the pastimes that they have when they play music. Does that make sense? So we have that aspect of you going into it. There's the generic thing. That's how it's going to develop. That's why the sahajya thing where you're just going to start already in a position. No, until you have rati, what's the meaning of the sai bhav? Right? So then you can have rati in a particular kind. But until that's developed, it won't be sai bhav. And until there's sai bhav, you can't act in those positions. Like that. Does that make sense? Just like we first develop the mood of the Vrajbasis, then within that we can be specific of which Vrajbasis. But if that's why you always see him talking about, the acharyas talking about that full surrender of the Vrajbasis in general. Then there is the aspect of the specific. You know, then they'll talk about within that then the gopis or Mother Yashoda like this. So it's very scientific how one's developing into this. But once one is there, then it just there's a non diff. They all work at once because one's always absorbed in rasa. But there's still you know the science how it functions. So you're going to have this aspect is that from having that particular rati, then that udipan is going to invoke then the sthayi bhava, which then Krishna all the other aspects of rasa come up. Because you see, with specific rasas, specific anubhavas, sattvika bhavas, and sanchari bhavas are there. Some are, you know, all for all of them, but some of them you don't have them in a specific rasa. Like that. Okay, now going into anubhava, sattvika bhava, and vyabhichari bhava. Right, because now he's dealt with the vibhava and the sthayi bhava. Right? Goswami. Yesterday we spoke about vibhava. Today we will cover the three other samagri bhavas, right? Because samagri means the ingredients. Right? So it's just like in Gita, when one's applying devotional service or the buddhi yoga, but you can analyze it into three ingredients: karma yoga, jnana yoga, and dhyana yoga. Right, understanding the three ingredients, then you can see how they're working at once. Because we'll have a tendency is that if he's in karma jnana, there's no jnana and there's no jnana. No, it just means it's the prominent. Prominent is you're engaging yourself in the activities, but you have knowledge. Otherwise, why are you engaged in the activities? And you have remembrance of Krishna. Otherwise, why are you in the activities? But it's not the prominent element. Well, the jnana, it'll be about the knowledge. The jnana, it'll be about the remembrance. So all of them will be there. It's just a matter of, as you adjust, it's given a different name, though it's the same aspects. Right? So then these ingredients are known, but they're used together. Right? So the same way is that, so they're all samagris, the five samagris that are there. So two have been discussed, the vibhava and the sthayi bhava. Today we'll cover the other three samagri bhavas. Anubhava, subsequent ecstasy, sattvika bhava, constitutional ecstasy, and vyabhichari bhava, aggressive ecstasy. Right, so in general they'll be talking about it as vyabhichari because as we mentioned before, that the vyabhichari comes in and it's opposing to the taste that's going on. Right, so it crashes in, it's aggressive. But then having crashed in, then it'll amalgamate and harmonize, and then it'll because it's harmonized, now it will continue in a new direction. Does that make sense? So when it crashes in, that's vibhava. Then having amalgamated and then moving the rasa in a different direction, now it's sanchari, because sanchari means giving direction. You understand? So that's why, so you can use either, because the point is for it to change direction, it has to have come in to change direction. And that it's come in, it's going to be compatible in rasa. Means it's opposing, but it's going to be homogenized and then are harmonized, and then it will change the direction. Does that make sense? We have already defined vibhava as the root cause, which ignites rati, loving attachment, for the beloved within the heart of the lover. Rati churns up the bhava that is latent in the chitta, heart, consciousness of the sadhaka. The various emotions that manifest externally in response to this awakened bhava are called anubhava. Although the anubhavas, when externally expressed, seem to have a similarity to vikara, the physical transformations caused by loving ecstasy, in truth, they are internal emotions in response to the bhava within the heart of the sadhaka. Right? Because what's subtle manifests externally. So the anubhava is actually an ecstatic symbol that's felt within the emotions, the internal emotion, that manifests as a physical thing afterwards. But it's the emotional thing that makes it. Well, the other one is that the whole ecstatic experience is pushing on the life airs. So that then pushes directly on the body. So it doesn't go through the emotional state, the mind and the thought pattern and all these kind of things. Just immediately affects the body. So that's why you'll see the list of anubhavas and the list of sattvika bhavas, many of them are common. But how it's coming about is slightly different. So that's the thing, the science is showing the difference. So there'll be a slight difference in the flavor of the two. But at the same time, they're all going together. Right. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Nritya, dancing, vilunta, rolling on the ground, gita, singing, kroshana, lamenting loudly, tanu, motana, stretching and yawning, hunkara, making loud roaring sounds, drimpana, yawning, dirga, svasa, releasing sighs, lokan, pekshita, being neglectful of people's reactions, lalashrava, salivation, atahasa, raucously laughing, gurna, swooning, and hiccuping. Are anubhava, external symptoms indicating the presence of bhava. Vrajana, how can these physical transformations enhance the taste for rasa in sthayi bhava? Relishing rasa is actually an inner experience, whereas the anubhava symptoms find expression externally. How then can they be considered as samagri bhava, ingredients of rasa? Right? Because it's all in the mind, it's all within, it's all the mood. How can there be any physical external symptoms? We get the same kind of question coming up that sometimes you see comes up in, you know, anytime people get any kind of mix with this kind of sahaja element is that, oh, it doesn't matter about this, it's all about the bhav, we don't need to show anything external, we don't need to show the form, we don't need to show the external, we don't have to chant our japa on beads, we just chant within our mind, I don't need to do all these kind of things to surrender, because within my mind I'm so, I don't have to say prayers because Krishna knows, and you know what I'm saying? They're just taking on, it's a standard mistake. Like that. Does that make sense? So someone just, I don't have to do any physical activities, that's just all within my mind, and that way because I'm lazy. Or the other ones is I don't have to, you know, these because, you know, it's just the emotions. So you're going to get this mistake being made in karma and yan. It comes up. Okay, so Goswami. When the jiva's internal activities on the transcendental shuddha-sattva plane stimulate and nourish bhava, a variety of vaichitra, wonderful spiritual feelings, is spontaneously manifested. This transcendental variety infuses the heart with ineffable bliss in many different ways. Bliss causes vikara, physical transformations, which are exhibited as the ecstatic symptoms known as udbhava svara. Because it's a natural thing. We have to understand is that as a person, conscious person, it's not just the consciousness. There's the senses that are there. There's the body that's there. And so therefore, what's experienced in the consciousness will be experienced in emotions, will be experienced in the body. They go together, yes.
The symptoms that are described by Goswami here Are they specific to certain rasa or just any rasa?
No, these are generic. Generic that they're doing means the number of them. Now it may be that certain rasas don't have certain ones,
okay,
like that. So that's that. Rupa Goswami mentions that he'll say in this rasa, I think that's coming up, means now we're doing generic, right? And so I think in the next, in the Western wave, I think he gets into the rasas. Then specific, then and there, if it hasn't already been mentioned, then there it may be mentioned about that, you know, for the cowherd boys, then these Anubhava, you know, these are the, in other words, he'll explain what is the Vibhava, but you have the Alambana. So the Alambana will be this in the cowherd boys. Then the Udipan, right? In other words, the general mood, what makes the flavor, is this. What they're the ashray of. Krishna is rasa, so which aspect of that are they the ashray of?
Mm-hmm.
Then the Udipan will be which elements in Krishna specifically spark their rati,
mm-hmm,
you know, and their shtaibhav.
Mm-hmm.
Then the effect of that, they will experience these particular anubhavas, these particular satyakabhavas, and these particular Vyamachari Bhavas.
Okay.
And so they'll explain each rasa like that. And so, because I think, let's say, each one has its specific. Most of them are common, but there's some ones, this doesn't happen in this rasa, or, you know, this one's more strong, or, you know, things like that. But otherwise, there is specifics. Yes.
Like among the Vyabhichari Bhavas in Madhurya Rati, only two of them are not manifested, but rest all can manifest.
Yes.
But in others it are less, like some in 24, 20.
Yes, I think that conjugal has the maximum in there, but it's overlapping which ones are and which ones. Because there's, you know, it's just like the rasas, they have, they're friends with each other, they're neutral with each other, they're enemies with each other. So then there's going to be certain conditions where how one would react, the other will be the opposite.
Yeah.
You know, so that's how you get all the different kind of flavors. So. When the heart is effervescent with emotion, the devotee is seen dancing. When his heart hums with joy, the devotee sings aloud, right? So now they're showing which emotions are causing it. So then from the one, it becomes effervescent. Then you see he dances. So then if from the Udipan, he becomes joyous, then he sings aloud. So the different emotions then give the different anubhavas, right? Just like we said, is that depending upon whether they push on air, earth, water, fire, air, or ether, in the sattvika bhavas, it will create those. So in other words, the agitation in the heart, then it disturbs the life airs. Which ones it disturbs, then that will create those ones. Yeah. These expressions of spiritual emotion further nourish rasa. The exhibition of these ecstatic symptoms is not the main cause of ecstatic emotion, which is actually vibhava. But anubhava is the follower and experienced as the supporter of vibhava. That's why anubhava is the lesser of it, what comes after. And so vibhava is actually the main thing. So that's why you see this whole trying to express these emotions and that, the sahajas and that, and they're saying because that's there, you can say they're advanced. No, it's because the vibhava is there, they're advanced. These will come automatically. When anubhava is churned up in the heart by vibhava, splendid symptoms are displayed in the body. Thus, when the heart is flushed with vibhava and sthaibhava, a second function is initiated within the heart in the form of anubhava, which then acts to further nourish the vibhava. Right? So because of that, then that nourishes the vibhava, and then it just continues. It just is, you know, in other words, the original perpetual motion. Actually. That unlimited energy. Therefore, anubhava really is a positive and independent samagribhava. So that's what he's saying. It's separate because it comes in itself, it's supportive of, but within that, because then now it will nourish vibhava. right? If it was just Vibhava is there, then this Anubhava comes and that's the end of it, you could say it's just a subsidiary of Vibhava. But no, because of that, then it now nourishes the Vibhava, which then causes more further emotions and ecstasy. Does that make sense? So that's why he's explained it's in its own thing. Because before he's saying it's emotional, so therefore why are we counting the bodily symptoms as a separate thing? Like that. But he's saying no, because that then initiates further taste of rasa. Though it is a secondary aspect, but it still has its own position. And sometimes we'll see it's also anubhava. So sometimes just up to this much they'll explain, and they'll always call it just anubhava. And anubhava includes sattvika and vyavacharya, because it basically means the secondary reactions that are happening to vibhava. So in that way, you can say all three of them are that. Does that make sense? So if they're just being very simple, they'll just say anubhava. But if you see as they're specifically talking about the samagri, then vibhava, and then anubhava means a specific one of the five. But otherwise, then sometimes, and they'll just talk about the sattvika, the sthayibhava, the vibhava, and the anubhava. They just mentioned those three, means in that you're including the other. Does that make sense? It doesn't mean that they're a part of anubhava, it just means you're using the overall term that the secondary bhavas that come up because of the sthayi bhava, vibhava, and sthayi bhava. Does that make sense? Yeah. The ecstatic symptoms are divided into two divisions: chitta, kuli, and kshepana, propelling. Singing, yawning, and so on are called chitta. Dancing and bodily contortions are called kshepana. There are other anubhava symptoms, right? So even within that, then you say you have the propelling and the kuli. So singing, yawning, these things, that they're not taking you into something else. But then you see here's the dancing and other bodily contortions. That's you going into some other aspect. There are other anubhava symptoms, but they are extremely rare. For instance, fulata, the entire body pulsating with excessive jubilation. Rakta udgama, exudation of blood. And astibhi sandhi viyoga, or karshana, dislocation or compression of the joints. So you see, these would happen in Lord Chaitanya, but you don't really hear of them happening in anybody else. So that means they may happen in Radharani. That's why when she goes into ecstasy, then the extremity of them, the gopis, are always trying to take care of that. You know, others just have the ecstatic symptoms and everybody appreciates, or they're also absorbed like this, and so it's not seen as a difficult situation or dangerous. But you see where the extremity that Radharani goes into, then they have to try to take care of this. You know, it's dealt with as like a medical condition. Like in the afternoon, when Krishna comes back from the fields and the gopis go out to sea from their houses, then when he goes from there, the separation is so great that they have to her body is like so hot that they have to, you know, take care of that. You know, they put down lotus stems which are cooling, and then on top of that smear that with chandan, and then lay her down on that. Basically, as soon as they lay down on it, they're immediately just dried up like that, and then they have to just keep doing things. Does that make sense? So they're there, but they're so rare that they're not mentioned. Does that make sense? The extraordinary symptoms like Kumarakara taking the form of tortoise as a result of a static emotion that our most beloved Sri Nimai Chaitanya exhibited are neither possible nor applicable to sadhakas. Right, so these are things that happen on that plane. So anybody developing that, you won't see it. So for us, what's being described is up to prema. You know, beyond prema, we see the pastimes and all things like that. But any ecstatic symptom beyond that doesn't apply to us. So they may be mentioned in some of the scriptures, but in general, when you're describing the whole process, they won't be described. So, good. because they're just beyond. So you see the karshana, dislocation or compression of the joints. Then the specific manifestation of that is the kumarakara. Is that it's not just a joint or that, it's all the joints in the head, and so it just goes into the body like a turtle. But you need a spiritual body to do that. And you need Mahabhav, you know, or Madanayaka Mahabhav to do that. So therefore it doesn't apply to us. Srila Goswami, what is Satvika Vikar? Goswami, when the purified consciousness known as Chitta is under siege by any kind of bhava, either directly or indirectly, the state of Chitta is described as Sattva. The range of emotions directly produced by the state of Sattva is called Sattvika Bhava. They are of three kinds: Snigda, wet; Digda, moist; and Ruksha, dry. Snigda Sattvika Bhava is divided into Mukhya, principal, and Gauna, subsidiary. When the heart is flooded with Mukhya Rati, a direct mood of loving Krishna, Mukhya Snigda Sattvika Bhava is expressed through Stambha, paralysis, Sveda, perspiration, and other principal symptoms. Where Rati is slightly indirect or obstructed, for instance, when Krishna is at a distance, it is called Gauna Rati, which produces Gauna Snigda Sattvika Bhava. The two main symptoms being Vaivarnye, pallor, and Svarabhange, aphasia, which causes symptoms such as faltering in the voice. And so you can see is that there's so much here, and in this description that they're not even describing about the five elements. They're just saying that the consciousness is being directly affected by the bhava. And so then you're going to get these wet, dry, and moist, and then there's going to be direct and indirect. Does that make sense? So it has so many aspects there. If, besides Mukhi and Gona Rati, other loving sentiments across the heart, then the lukewarm bhava of Rati, Digda Satika Bhava, is manifest through Kampa, shivering. Further, if an ostensibly devotional person who does not possess two rati is struck with joy and astonishment by hearing the wonderful qualities and pastimes of Krishna, which then leads to ananda, he experiences ruksha bhava, dry emotions. Romancha, revelation, is an exemplar. Right. So so you see is that the moist and then wet, moist, and ruksha. So when there's so many symptoms coming in at once, then it'll be moist because there's nothing to take it so much further. When it's just the one main thing, then it becomes wet. Right? It's a very, does that make sense? The emotion is very strong. The other one, because if you have so many conflicting emotions, nothing can take up to be too prominent, so it'll be moist. And then you see someone who's, what are you saying here is that the, someone who doesn't have the full rati, or the attraction, you know, just occasionally comes up and this and that, then you'll get ruksha bhava, dry. That makes sense?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Ratana, you know, so like the sahajiyas, then it's not even dry, it's called, it's called lunka bhava, by sticking a chili up your nose. Could be full bhava. Vrajanath, how are the sattvika bhavas produced? Goswami, when the chitta of the consciousness, which means the heart, of the sadhaka who's immersed in sattvika bhava, pure spiritual motion, is united with the prana, right? So now he's explaining them there. Because the other one he's saying, what's direct, what ones those will give? I mean, what's wet, moist, and dry, and direct or indirect, which ones they'll give? And then he's mentioning then, how are they produced? So mechanically, then it's based on the various, the elements. So the different life airs, dealing with these different elements. So when it's united with prana, the bodily life energy, then the prana is placed in an abnormal condition, which causes perturbations in the external body. As a result, symptoms like paralysis, perspiration, etc. are manifested. Vrajana, how many types of satvika, vikara, ecstatic transformations are there? Goswami, there are 8 satvika vikara. Stamba, paralysis, sveta, perspiration, romancha, horripilation, swara beta, faltering of the voice, vipatu, or kampa, shivering, vaivarnya, pallor, asaru, tears, pralaya, devastation, unconsciousness. Prana moves inside the body in a balanced manner upon the vayu, life air, which is part of the gross elements. However, under certain circumstances, the prana predominates, and being, besides associating with the life air, sometimes mixes with one of the other remaining 4 mahabhuta, gross elements, of the external body, which are earth, water, fire, and ether. This conjunction causes different transformations of the body in accordance with a particular mahabhuta, which the prana is mixing. Right, so the consciousness then is that, well, the effect of that, that bhava is pushing on the life airs, which then push on one of the 5 elements or a combination. So that makes sense. So we can see as these sattvika bhavas seem to have the most complicated way that they're manifest. Because jnana bhava just had the 2 main divisions, but this one has, you know, that whether it's wet, dry, or moist. And then it has which life air it's dealing. I mean, which element it's dealing with. When predominating prana mixes with bhumi, then stamba, paralysis, is manifest. When mixed with apa, then ashu, tears, are manifest. When mixed with teja, then vaivarnya, pallor, and sveta, perspiration, are manifest. Right? Because the perspiration comes from heat, right?
Mm.
Yeah. When mixed with akasha, the body is overcome by pralaya, swoon, and unconsciousness. When predominating prana is situated within its own element, air, there are 3 varying intensities of mixture, each with its own particular effect. When the intensity is manda, weak, the manifestation is kampa, shivering. When the intensity is madhya, medium, the manifestation is svara beta, afasta, for example, faltering of the voice. And when the intensity is tibra, strong, the manifestation is romancha, or emulation. Yeah, so when you have romancha, kampa, shru, taranga, bhakti, then that's the life air, the air on air. And, these 8 sattvika vikaras are both internally and externally, and in all cases they may be laced with extreme perturbations. By some people, such vikaras are called variously bhava, principal emotion, and anubhava, subordinate emotion. However, one should note that anubhava acts externally, hence it cannot be designated as sattvika bhava. The activities of anubhava, manifesting symptoms, for example, of nitya, dancing, are generated by the intervention action of the intelligence. Thus, sattvika bhava is not directly involved. Sattvika bhava, however, acts directly without any interference of the intelligence or intellect in such manifestation as stamba, being stumped. Therefore, anubhava and sattvika bhava are separate individual bhavas, because otherwise you think they're the same. One is that the emotions are there, the intelligence works, you can apply it. But in this one, then it's you're overwhelmed by it. That makes sense. So it's different. Even though they both have that physical manifestation, like that, it's, you could say as the internal mood is there, it's manifested externally, and with that you can work with that. You can dance for Krishna nicely, sing nicely for Krishna, and things like this. So the intelligence is still functioning. But in these ones, it's just the because of the life airs, then you're unable. You don't have any control of it. So yes.
Does it mean that the sattvika bhavas are stronger than anubhavas?
Not necessarily. It's just a different flavor,
Like
that. It's just a different flavor, because the joy can be so much, and your singing can be so much, like that. So. Yeah, means it wouldn't be there. It's just the Goswami is explaining it so that you can clearly see it's a different ingredient. Otherwise, we tend to put them all together. Oh, as it creates this, we'll put them all together. That's the tendency when we use the ascending analytical process. We tend to just what seems to be the most interesting, you just stick them together. You know, so just like, let's say, in the contemporary Indian classical music, then there was a guy about 100 years ago called Bhatkhande. So a lot of the tradition and that was being lost in that, and so he being, you know, very interested in this, he wanted to see that all these different ragas and all that were being sung in India were maintained. He didn't want it to be lost. So then he went around all over India to all the great singers and all the great schools and collected music from all of them. Now, because all these schools have different ways of putting it all together, you know, I mean, categorizing it, so therefore he came up with a very simple thing, because in general it works like this, but it's still very general, is that all the ones with specific groups of notes, they're put into one group. So there's 10, like this, there's 10 groups called tots. You know, so you have the Bhairav tot, you have this, that, and so you have these 10 tots. So you say, oh, so it's a rag. No, it's not a rag, it's a group of notes. Then you apply the raga on that. The specifics and how it's applied, how the notes move, because depending on the notes, how they move, that gives a different flavor. If you move straight through the notes, it makes one. If you move back and forth between the notes, it gives a different flavor. So each raga will use differently. So it basically, you could say, takes care of it in that way, then the notes are there, you still know kind of basically times of day and everything like this. But the difficulty will come up is that if you're saying this goes, is the difficulties comes up is that you have, when you're dealing with the more personal aspect, the different, you have the six personalities of Krishna as the ragas, and then the female raginis that are connected with that, right? That, so then you end up with 36 main aspects, right? And then within that, so in other words, they're categorized according to these six instead of thus 10, because sometimes one group, let's say it's in the morning. So Radha and Krishna are together in the morning, right? So there's a raga that's going on there, right? So if they got up from the Mangalartik, then let's say the Bhairav is being used, right? Now, let us say later in the day, let's say like 10, 11 o'clock, then the gopi is remembering being with Krishna at that time in the morning. So what's the mood there? Right? It's going to be that Bhairav. But you're remembering it at 10. That's a different time. It's a different group of notes. So it has to be a rag that'll have that flavor. At the same time, be at that time. Because it will be, you're looking back, so there'll be that element of separation. Well, in Bhairav, it's not separation. You understand? But at the same time is that they're with Krishna there. And so, therefore, they're experiencing that mood of being with Krishna there, but then they're going to be separated soon because the sun, you know, it's the light's going to come, they have to go home because they're not at home. You know, the mothers are going to come and wake them up, they have to be in bed. So then there's going to be that thing of projecting forward to when they're not with Krishna, and that's going to be a slightly different time, it's going to give slightly different notes.
That's Purvaraga.
Yeah, so you understand? So there are going to be all these different aspects where the traditional system will nicely put them in their place, and then you know who's friends with who, you know, who's inimical, who's this and that. So because there'll be these ragas that from you can go from one into the other into this, and you know it's like that. You're in the morning, but then we'll be here, but then we'll meet again at that, you know, at Radhakund. So you can move through the ragas like that. Does that make sense? Yeah. So this is what the music can do. And so then they're pointing out is that we'll tend to just take it and just go, okay, you know, like Bhatkhande, you know, here there's a physical sip, then put that all in one place. And you know, here's a monk, put all that there, and put all this here, and all the, you know, like this. And so we won't really understand it because we're looking at it intellectually just what is easy for the intellect. Because the intellect just analyzes things. So you put it in those places. But the point is what you're analyzing and when is based on the mind. The mind is what's choosing what you're going to analyze. And the intellect just analyzes what's there. The information is brought in from the senses, from past things, it just analyzes that. But what's going to be analyzed, what you do with it, you continue the analyzation, what you choose, that's the mind. So actually that the emotional aspect is the more important. So you can see how the emotion goes. So how it goes from that into that emotion and then into the physical. Or it goes into the light there's into the physical. It's different. So that's why then it'll be. You know, and then these have a stronger thing than when he gets into the Vyabhichari, then we'll see there'll be some similar kind of aspect, but it'll be a temporary aspect. It'll be something that just comes up and goes within a major thing. You know, it's just like, let's say, someone's upset, right? And then being upset, they could be, so the upset is the main thing, right? But within that, they could be angry. They could feel unconfident, unsheltered. They could feel, you know, does that make sense? It just goes, you know, from moment to moment it can go. That's the Vyabhichari. Does that make sense? Like that, yeah.
All right. So, I think it's mentioned in the beginning when we started with all the Rasatattva, the order will be like, first there is a Uddipa, and then that evokes the sthayi, and then because of the rati, and then after that, in order to manifest or change it, then the vyabhichari bhavas are expressed, through that then the sattvikas, and finally the anubhavas. Is that the order?
Well, here's gone from anubhava, and then he's describing sattvika. Because the vyabhicharis, they're going to give flavors to these others. So you can say, yes, the Vyabhichari is there because it's constantly changing and permutating the flavors that are already there. That's going on. So in that way you can say that, but at the same time is that the Anubhava seems to be the more prominent of them. It may manifest as the physical and then you have these. Does that make sense?
Yes.
You know, it means it's just like you're using the cooking technique. You can put in this spice or that spice. But it's just like you're cooking a potato subject, you know, pan frying a potato subject. You can put in so many different spices or what you do. That's all just, that's just all the other chart. It's still a potato subject. You know, does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it just gives a different flavor. You know, does that make sense? Yeah. Vrajanath, revered Goswami, kindly explain the cause of symptoms like stumbha, etc. Stumbha occurs when the devotee is speechless, feeling vacant and acute inertia because of one or all of the following emotions. Harsha, now the stumbha, this is on the sattvika? Yeah, this is sattvika, stumbha. Okay, following emotions, harsha, delight, bhaya, fear, ascharya, astonishment, vishada, extreme depression, or amarsha, rage. So those are going to bring about stumbha. You know. So then we're thinking, oh, sorry, so complicated. Then this is, no, it keeps going. Don't worry. Yeah, if you were thinking, wow, this is so complicated, can't get any more, don't worry, it will get. Because it's like, you're talking about these unlimited flow of emotions, and you know, it's an ocean that's going on. So these are all the means you can see is just like, let's say, with music, seven notes, you get unlimited music. And someone can just, hum a few notes, a combination of a few notes that have, you know, the notes itself, the particular speed or the intensity or the phrasing, how far they are apart. You know the melody. You know, and it's like these don't overlap. And if they do, there is a copyright suit.
So basically, once you grasp the meaning of all these technical terms and how they act and interact, when you begin to read Leela, you can identify them straight away.
Yes, you can identify. means that you know that, but the actual it'll be means one is if one has that great intellect that one can keep all that together and all
right.
that. You know, like let's say, you know, Goswami Maharaj or something like that, then you can do that, you know, or Giriraj Maharaj or something. But then you have the element is that that's still not the higher position, because the samagri is being analyzed so we understand what's there and appreciate. Like what you're saying, we appreciate what's there. Mm. Because that's the whole point of the shantarasas, we appreciate. But when one is has that rati for Krishna and it goes beyond that point, then it's because of the taste in it, that's where you see. You know what I'm saying? So that's going to be, you know, so it's a matter of it's like, how do you say, Sheldon's trying to figure it out, but Penny knows what's going on. Yeah? Does that make sense? Yeah.
So there's the intellectual understanding and then
yes.
the taste.
Yes. The whole point is we're trying to get to taste. But because we tend to analyze things on whether we're going to get a benefit from it or not. I mean, so we're used to analyzing it according to sense gratification. So now we're learning to analyze it according to Ananda. You know, it's connected with Krishna and what taste is there.
Mm-hmm.
Then we start to appreciate that, yes, there's so much more going on there.
Mm-hmm.
And this explains what's happening here. But what's going on here is, you know, it doesn't have nearly the depth and of what goes on in the spiritual world. But you see, there's a reflection. So all these things that we're saying here, we can relate to because we've seen these things happening. We just don't understand the science that's going on.
Right.
So that's why then you can deal very nicely. That's why there are some, either they have experience and all that, and somehow or another, by realization, you know, from previous lives, they just, you know, naturally appreciate and all that. Or there are those who actually understand, like you see in the Natya Shastra. Then it's going to explain there these things technically so that you know what path is going to be taking for emotions. Because now it's just, okay, do this, and then the guy tries this. No, hey, try a little of that, and then they try this way, and then, okay, well, you know, what about this? And they try, till they get it the way they like it. Or if it's a B movie, it never quite gets there. Right? So that aspect is there, is that it doesn't quite, but here for the drama, they know that, you know, it's like the stumba is going to cause one feeling vacant, you know, and that's going to come from a harsha, delight, bhaya, fear, ascharya, astonishment, bishada, extreme depression, or marsha, rage. So then, if any of these are coming up in the thing, you know that it could go into stumba. You know? Does that make sense? So he says, oh, this happened, he became stunned, but why? What emotion caused that? So then the person knows they go from that emotion into stunned.
Mm.
And then that emotion's still there, you know, smoldering in that stunned state. So then they could use it for the drama. So you would see is that it would be much more based on the flow of the emotions, the Vedic drama in that, rather than realism, and that you have to, you know, connect it together. You have to already show that the guy is really good at throwing things and he's a marksman just picking up a rock and throwing it, you know, at the beginning of the movie. So at the end of the movie, when the final thing comes down and he takes down the, you know, whatever it is, the thing and saves the world with a rock, you know, and then how does he do that? It's already been established at the beginning.
Right.
But here, it's about the flow of emotion. And what is so it is exact and it's scientific, but it's the how emotion one flows into the next. And when that particular mood is obtained, then the scene changes, or the act changes. So you don't have to wind things up. You know, people can say, oh, but that doesn't work in the modern. But so many people use that, you know, in things to advantage. You know, they'll use that. You have a regular scene, what people function at. And they have particular natures and characters, and that's fixed throughout the whole, you know, performance. But then you have these side things where they can go off and they do other things that's completely out of character and this and that and all that. And then, but it establishes something. And then having done that, it just goes back to the regular and moves on. So it's just a more of an understanding of that. It's about the flavor. You want to establish a certain flavor. Does that make sense? Yes.
Also, Maharaj, like somebody asked me a question, then I realized this, that at the stage of like now practicing, then if we have a more understanding and of the rasas and all, then we can actually direct ourselves and others in what kind of activity we need to perform. Like in Vaidisadhana, then it's like from the scriptures it mentions like an encyclopedia, so many more things can be done. But in a particular situation, according to one's particular vow, then some will be favorable, some
will not be
favorable. Yeah. That's why like what Prabhupada gave to us, it's very exact in the flavor we are wanting to develop. And by having the idea, then we can appreciate and have more enthusiasm to practice what we are practicing with them.
Yeah, because there's a certain flavor you want to establish. Yes.
From Friday reading also, before we got into this section, Rupa Goswami mentioned that our present experience is based on our impressions in the past.
Yes.
So, for many, it sounds like super, super complex.
Yes.
And that's why, as you mentioned with the music, we try to categorize everything just to simplify it.
Yes, yes.
Because otherwise we don't have the previous impressions for that.
Yes.
So then, does it mean that what we practice today, it creates the impressions, and then in the future we will be able to understand what's described, what's going on?
Yes, like just like now. Does this basically kind of make sense? You know, means it's not like, in other words, it may be more than we can remember, but it's not more than we can grasp. We understand what the principles are going on here, but we may not remember all, you know, which one's connected to which and all that, right?
Yeah.
So, but we read this in the third year.
Yeah.
And it was like, you know, we could have just, you know, gotten out a book by, you know, Stephen Hawkins and read it backwards, and it would have made just as much sense.
Yeah. The only impression it created that we actually did it.
Yeah. We got through it. We survived. Yeah. We didn't die. Yeah. So it's just the whole thing is like that. So that's why it's there. So now what happens is this, the psychological process, how it's working is that we're pulling in information from the senses. Then the mind is going to go into the memory, which is part of the intelligence, to see what's the past experiences and knowledge about that, right? Then deciding, you know, are we going to look at this? Then looking at it, now the intelligence will categorize it. That's the first thing. It has to take it and simplify it down to something that you can relate to. You have to be able to relate to it. So it has to relate to, like you said, a samskara. Then from there, now it'll expand on it based on that samskara. So that's why someone who has no experience in a particular area or culture, when they try to deal with it, then they can't. You know, it's like, let's say, modern archaeologists. They've never left their hometown or something. And they're trying to work out the culture and that of, you know, some ancient civilization, you know, halfway around the globe. That, you know, has no connection with the, you know, Greco-European, you know, Roman kind of European kind of scene, you know. And so they will take, because there's so many things in the culture that they don't have in there. So when they see something like a, you know, an item, you know, from the house, they found a house and that, then they think of all kinds of weirdo things, what you do with it. You know, they found this, oh, this is for, you know, maybe for hanging curtains or something like that. And this actually is for grinding spices. You know, they just, I remember seeing one thing, it was this, pictures, and it was showing stuff from, what's that?
Harappa
or Mohenjo-daro? Yeah, Mohenjo-daro. And it was a household, and they were showing things from the kitchen. They had found, you know, because they found some stoves and some ashes and a pot, so it must be a kitchen, you know, like this. And they had a picture of something. They gave this ridiculous thing what it's for. And like that. And at the same time, it was something that we use here, the Bengalis use now in their kitchens. And so it's very obvious it's that. But they had no idea they gave it some other kind of thing. You know, it was, it's, So that's the thing, is they can only extend their intellect based on their experience. So that's the difficulty with the inductive method, is that since you have to go from your experiences, then you can only expand your knowledge from your experience on. But the problem is since you don't know what your experience actually means or what its value is or what it's for, you don't know how to follow that process. Well, the Vedic is because you learn by shabda. You learn by hearing. Therefore, you know where this particular samskar fits, this impression, where it fits, what it's for, what you can do with it. Then, or based on that, now you'll start to analyze. So that's why in the beginning, it's just, first you're removing doubts, right? So shravana, you're hearing. But this, well, what about this, and what about that, and so many things, you know. So we're only, you know, the devotee only worries about practicing devotional service. So immediately the hand goes up. We have to maintain our families, we have to be practical, we have to be real here, we can't just be sentimental. It's kind of, so, because in their mind is that you only have karma and jnana. Because I'm going to get a profit, I work. I'm not getting a material profit, I don't work. So therefore, since I'm not acting for material profit, I'm not working. So who's going to maintain the family? It's just immediately, that's their samskara. So then they have to be told that they're from here. No, because it's, you're performing your activities to please Krishna. So that's why it's devotion. That's why we say a devotee only does devotional service, because everything he does, whether it's the direct activities of sadhana bhakti or the indirect activities of his duties within the varnashram system, he's only doing it to please Krishna. Mm. Therefore, it's only devotion. And so because he's doing, you do the mechanics of varnashram, you do get maintained. That's what it does. You know, you don't have to separately worry about it. But you're doing it because of duty and service to Krishna, not duty and attachment, or just attachment, or just greed, you know, like that. So that's the point is, we don't have that, so we keep hearing that. And then, excuse me. And then eventually, we're able to start to, okay, remove the doubt. Okay, intellectually it makes sense. You know, whoever is explaining it has removed all the doubts. Now I start to practice in my life, so manana. Now I try to practice and try to see my duties in connection with Krishna. You know, my service in connection with Krishna. So like that, and then sometimes it works, but this comes up, that comes up, and then I analyze, you know, then I try to do it better next time, or I talk to the devotees and get more inspiration, so therefore the sadhu sangha and all these kind of aspects, until it becomes steady and all that, and then realization comes about, then it becomes the value. Then it's needed, yes. So that's the whole point, is that education means you change, you get from, you know, you either never heard of it or you heard of it in some strange way, into what's the actual proper way that's valuable in Krishna consciousness. And so therefore you go by the samskaras that are there. That's why the varnashram system is there. It has the basis in samskaras for everybody, because everybody fits into these categories. Or even if they're a combination of them, they're, you know, some kind of, you know, how you say, mix. But it's still, you're dealing, when you're dealing with management, it has these laws. When you're dealing with money, it has these laws. And like this, and so there's always something. You know, so maybe the cultural aspect or the clarity of it's not there, but the mechanics of it, then you can find. So that's why then when you explain something, use the examples that the person will appreciate. That then connects it to the samskara. So in other words, I give the thesis, I give the reason. So I give the thesis, what's that? I give the reason, it makes sense, but then I give the example so that I can relate to it. Relating to it, then I can see it's okay. Then it's, you know, whatever I was thinking is taking it further. You know, just like, oh, but we have to be nice to everybody. Yes, we have to be nice to everybody, but that was just a practice of a particular quality. But if you understand that we're the soul, not the body, and we're all servants of Krishna, that means all living entities have that equality. That's the basis of working with everybody. But at the same time, is now you can work with everybody equally, but acknowledge the difference in their position based on their particular condition. Where when you say everybody's equal, you're not addressing that as, at all. So that's the thing, is that you can see is I'm getting what I'm looking for without the difficulties that come up from it. So it's a higher position, right? So that's the bring near. That's the synthesis. Now you're going to apply that, is therefore in your life when you're dealing with devotees or all living entities, seeing the part, you're going to follow the etiquette, you're going to deal nicely, you're going to deal properly. Does that make sense? So that's the siddhanta. So what you're doing is exactly this process. You're accessing, you're presenting it, and then you're accessing what is the particular individual. So that's why it's not what you're talking that's important. It's being able to access the individual's, how do you say, samskars, their impressions. So a lot of times we think, no, you have to talk a different topic. No, it's being able to make it accessible to them. That's the preaching, is making the topic accessible, not talking something that doesn't ruffle anybody's feathers. But, you know, if you haven't ruffled feathers, nothing's been improved. You see, birds, what do? Half the day, ruffle their own feathers, right? They're cleaning. They're straightening them out. You know what I'm saying? So you have to get in there. But you have to know how to do that. So that makes sense.
Yeah.
So, yes.
Also in this context, Baldevidya Bhushan explains, just like, you know, how to develop the rasti, or you have previous impressions, he tells in the context of poetry. The cause of developing poetry is the previous ability, which you get from your impressions.
Okay.
And along with that, then examining the world and reading the books and whatever is available,
mm-hmm.
seeing poetry within that.
Mm-hmm.
And then the third one is learning from those who know poetry.
Mm.
So similarly, all three combined together, actually.
Yes. Yeah, I remember, I think it was Tamal Krishnamar, and when he heard that I was, you know, dabbling in classical music, his first question is, who are you listening to? Because his point was, is you don't know music. You have to listen to those who know music. Then only you're going to get that impressions. Then you'll be able to, according to your ability, use it. So that's that point you said, that third point there, and then you have the study, so you analyze it a second, like that. Then it's according to your ability. So that's why you have somebody comes along, they go into the garage and pick up that guitar that their father had bought, you know, 20 years ago. And then, you know, how you say, 6 months later, then they're on the road, you know, as a band, you know. And then someone else is in the garage for the rest of their life, and, you know, they keep getting citations from the police for disturbing the public. No?
I don't know.
You ever notice on the map it says Garage Band? That's the app. That's where it starts. Because at least in the American houses, you know, the garage is the place you can get away and not bother the family so much, unless you have a basement. But I think nowadays most houses are not built with a basement, so the garage is where you can go.
Well, in USSR, we didn't have garages. So
we did.
Nobody had cars. I mean, except for some people.
Nobody had cars for yourself.
In Israel, they use a bomb shelter.
Yeah, that's even better because no one will hear you.
Yeah, that's right.
But inside the flight.
Hmm?
Now it's inside your apartment.
Yeah, that's a problem. Well, at least if they wear headphones, it's not so bad. So these things are science. They're already there. Modern intellectuals, they analyze these things and come up with something. You know, some 100 years ago observed something and this and that, and so slowly they build on it. But the problem is because of the tendency towards the intellectuals' tendency towards atheism, then they can't put it together in a personal way. So even though they get so close, they'll veer off in some weird direction, and they never quite get there.
There's one element that comes to mind all the time when you mention about samskara. and sticking to duties, and then practicing, and then the association of devotees, referring to Shastra. In Madhya Kanambini, Vishnu Dukkavati Thakur mentioned that when you come to a certain stage of purification, Chit Shakti comes in.
Yes.
And whatever you need to know is realized in the heart.
Yes.
It's revealed in the heart.
Yes. Yes. But it's still, you have the it's based on those other things. It's not going to happen unless you're associating with devotees and that.
Yes.
And that it comes, you're going to associate more, you're going to value more, you're going to value more the scriptures, more the Acharya's directions and everything like that. But yes, I mean, Prabhupada talks about it just on everybody, Krishna in the heart, so it's a matter of who's willing to listen and not.
Right.
So he's telling you, it's like you come up to the door, and should I open the door or not? And there's this word, no. So... so yes, that the aspect is Krishna reveals. That's why that you have that verse where one who has that firm faith in Guru and Krishna, all the imparts of the Vedas are revealed. So that's the thing, is that so that's why this push towards the intellectual perfection of Krishna consciousness on the modern context is not going to get anyone anywhere.
What do you mean by modern context?
It means that we're using, let's say, because modern intellectuals and modern society is valuing certain qualities or presentations and all that, we should use that as a measurement for judging Krishna consciousness.
You mean academics?
Academics, you know, social, political, you know, just whatever the internet has to offer.
Material conception,
yeah. Yeah, because of that, then we judge things by, oh, you can't say that. And say, why not? You know, why can't you say it? You know, they say, oh, you can't say this, but it's, you know, because, you know, these people don't like that. But then there's another group of people that they're fine with that.
Yes.
And it's just a matter of how you explain it to those people. Like, I remember I'm explaining, it was in Connecticut, right? So Connecticut's where, you know, Boston is, and so basically Connecticut means they're educated. You know, Connecticut, Massachusetts, they're educated people. And so there in the room at the program was all kind of like, you know, nice people, you know, established people, professional people, more, you know, more mature people. And so we were explaining something about the masculine and feminine kind of principles like that. So in one sense, you can look at it, these are against the modern concept. But when you explain it, people were fine with it. And these were, women were asking the questions on, you know, professional women and stuff like that. So it's just a matter of how it's explained that you go through, you show how, you make it practical into their samskaras. So what happens is, let's say you have somebody who's liberal and they're saying one thing, and somebody who's conservative is opposing that. So the point is the conservative is only going to give examples according to his samskara. So the liberal can't relate to it. So what they're saying doesn't apply. And the liberal, what they say is according to their samskara, it doesn't apply to the conservative. So the point is this Krishna consciousness, since it's the middle, therefore you speak what's the proper, what the Shastra says, but you give the example according to either of them, which it, if it works.
Right.
And so therefore, everybody can come to the middle.
Right.
You know, it's just according to their conditioning, certain things are valued, and so they're going to take that as a basis. Because whatever it is, they all have it. It's just a matter of what that looks like. You know, it's like the liberal has his group, though they're not family. You know, the conservative has family and a community. But they have the same value, but it's just how they approach it. So the liberal is trying to get all of his people into the positions. But because they're not direct family members, it's not called nepotism. Even though that is his family. And so he is being nepotistic or whatever it is.
Nepotist.
Yeah. So, but if the conservative is doing that because they are family and relatives and community, then they'll say, oh, it's nepotism. But they're doing exactly the same thing. The liberals come in, they get rid of all the conservatives and put their own people in there. Then next election, because they did nothing, then the conservatives come in, they remove all the liberals and put their own people in. And because there's something wrong with what they do, in other words, they solve one problem, but there's another problem, because there's a shortage. And so people get accustomed to things going right. You know, in other words, if it's too hot outside, when I come inside and it's cool, I appreciate the coolness. But after a while, I get adjusted to it. Now I notice I'm hungry. So I completely forget about that being inside is cool. So then I think, oh, I got to go outside and get something to eat. But then going outside and get something to eat, I get something to eat. This is great. And then you go, wow, it's so hot. I got to go back inside. So that's all they're doing, is they're solving one problem and leaving another. And just it goes back and forth. So that's why it's just a matter of, you know, so many years, what, like, you know, 10 years and that. And it swings from being completely liberal to completely conservative to completely liberal. Because each one addresses something, and then after some time it changes. Does that make sense? What's lacking means, in other words, I'm appreciating the coolness, but as soon as I stop appreciating, now I worry about the hunger. You know, and as long as I'm hungry, I don't notice the heat. But as soon as the hunger's gone, now I notice the heat. So that's all that's happening is, whatever problem is there, the new party comes in, they solve that problem. But in solving that problem, since it's not complete, you know, it's not connected to Krishna, then there'll be a hole. And then that hole becomes obvious because now you're conditioned to the proper thing. Now the hole is a big deal. Now the next party comes in, plugs the hole, and now everything's great. And then when you get conditioned to that, now you notice what's missing on the other side. So like that, it just keeps going back and forth, back. So that's the thing. So unless it's being brought in from the middle, then you're showing them how in their position they can function. You know, so in other words, let's say someone's totally pro-Vedic. You're discussing with how they're engaging that in Krishna's service and not getting distracted by you know, all the technical rules. Same time, let's say you have some teenagers and all that, you know, you're inspiring them and what they're doing and trying to keep them from getting too distracted by their, you know, their lack of respective authority or regulation. So, but the message is the same. It doesn't change. It's not that it's a different message. So that's the problem, is this hard, soft preaching is seeing as different messages. But Krishna consciousness is only one message. It's just you have to speak to your audience. That's the principle. So it doesn't change. You see, Prabhupada's saying the same thing no matter which audience he's talking to. But the examples he gives, the mood he takes, how he approaches it. You know, if you're dealing with people that don't accept authority, you have to establish the principle. You have to accept authority. And then once you do that, then you can get into the detail. Like that. So sometimes you think, oh, why is Prabhupada pushing that point so much? You know, they won't like it, but that's the principle. Because how will you understand the detail? Unless, just like they're saying, you have to just do devotional service. A pure devotee doesn't worry about anything else. He's not interested in any sense gratification, any material profit, gain, say, none of those things. So that's a principle. Then the detail is, okay, Prahlad Maharaj is going to manage his kingdom. Yudhishthira is going to manage his kingdom. Sudama Brahmas is going to do his Brahman stuff. That's the detail. So when we say, no, but what about, you know, just get into that, okay, now you've shown that, yeah, you can connect all that to Krishna, but the principle that you still don't want material desire, how are you in that position going to get to pure devotional service? What's going to keep you from just being a Hindu? You know, so that's the difficulty. It's Prabhupada establishing, because it's descending, he's establishing the main point. You catch that, then you'll be able to engage your life and business and family and money and possessions and, you know, holidays, all that in Krishna service. But if not, then you don't. And if it's too much they can't catch, then yes, okay, then you just talk from that and you just show them how in an inductive way to kind of progress. Until they're purified enough, then they can appreciate the deductive. Is that? Okay. Yeah, I guess we're. Okay, so let's just finish this one. because it's just a list of what does what. Sveda, perspiration, right? So the first one was stamba, accompanied by salivation and melting of the heart, is caused by delight, fear, or rage. Romancha, horripilation, happens because of astonishment, delight, enthusiasm, or fear. Svaraveda, aphasia, leading to faltering of the voice, is prompted by lassitude, amazement, wrath, pleasure, or fear. So you see, sometimes one quality can create so many, and that's why you can have a combination of them, or it can move from one to the other, or Kampa, uncontrolled shivering, is a result of Lalya, spiritual greed brought about by fear, anger, or delight. Vaivarna, pallor, is caused by a combination of lassitude, rage, and fear. Asru, involuntary tears, pour out caused by feelings of delight, anger, or lassitude. Tears of delight are Shitala, cold, and tears of anger are Ushna, hot. Pralaya, unconsciousness caused by overpowering spiritual joy or sorrow that erases consciousness and the ability to act, thus causing a swoon and falling to the ground. Right. So that will finish, because then we'll go into another aspect.
Ramancha Kamba Ashu.
Yeah.
Ramancha
Kamba Ashu. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, so it has the process. Is good.
But that's all. Happens in the Kirtan, Mahaprabhu Kirtan, and Nitya Kirtan,
dancing, singing.
It's both Anubhavas and Sattvika Bhavas, all in Mahaprabhu's Kirtan.
Yeah. Yeah. Remember, Chaitanya, they said whatever they were saying, how they were phrasing. And he said, no, it's Romancha, Kampastru, Taranga, Bhajan. These three things are mentioned there because devotees would break them up in funny ways. These three things. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Shri Prabhupada ki, Samaveda Bhaktivedanta ki, Jai Nityananda Prabhu.